You're listening to Proof to Product. This is episode one. We're taking you behind the scenes with entrepreneurs that run product-based businesses, people that were once in your shoes. Our TSBC alumni, speakers, and friends will shed light on growth strategies, resources, and inspiration to help you scale your creative business. Hey everyone, this is Katie Hunt, the founder of Trade Show Bootcamp, and today I have Jen Pham Corbett and Lisa Towns, the founders of Farewell Paper on the line with me. Jen and Lisa attended our very first Paper Camp conference in 2012 when it was just a handful of us sitting around a living room floor of a bed and breakfast. And since then, they've had a ton of growth in their business. They've exhibited at shows, expanded their product line, they've hired a team, and they've worked with sales reps. They've also been TSBC speakers for the last few years, and these ladies are super smart businesswomen and fantastic mentors to others in the creative field. So I'm excited to have you both on the podcast today. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you for having us. That's a very nice complimentary intro.
I meant every word of it. So let's start at the very, very beginning. Where did you two meet and how did Farewell get its start?
Well, we met, Lisa and I were both in advertising, and I think the first time we met officially was when I was interviewing for a position, a creative position at an ad agency, and Lisa was one of the creatives that I'd be working with. And so we met there, and I don't know how long it was before we actually started working together at the agency, but we were coworkers for a while, and then we ended up being placed as a team on some projects that we totally knocked out of the park. And we're awesome. We were junior to mid-level creatives at an ad agency, so we weren't getting the most glamorous projects. And then, so we kind of slogged through those. And then we were actually put on a pitch together, and our work was actually going through, which was awesome. But we were working really late hours, which wasn't awesome.
Yeah.
And it was a lot of hard work and a lot of stuff to do at that time, which we didn't really know if we, I think both of us were sort of at the point where we didn't know if we were loving advertising and loving that corporate culture and loving doing work for other people and seeing your creative work get changed, you know, throughout that whole process of dealing with the client and internal reviews and all that stuff. And so as we were working through this pitch, working really late hours, we were both working on some side stationery. We were doing our side hustle, which we didn't know would turn into a hustle, but I was working on my own wedding invitations, and Lisa was working on invitations for a friend's wedding. And so we were spending a lot of hours at the office, not working on our work, but instead looking online at stationery and different stationery lines and things like that. And so we were, didn't know it at the time, but we were developing our line and developing our aesthetic and seeing what we liked. And yeah. And then through that process, I think we just started to, you know, we figured out, oh, we could do this. We could work on these together. And we started collaborating on different invitations and different projects for coworkers, things like that, baby showers and, you know, wedding showers, small stuff like that. And we ended up jumping into the event stationery world through that. And then
that was in 2009.
Yeah, I think we started in 2008, and then officially, you know, started the business in 2009, right before, you know, all the layoffs were coming and session was tanking. And so we were kind of seeing like, oh, well, this is an opportunity to start a business. You know, now's a great time to start.
Right. Well, that was the year that I went to my first stationery show too. And I look back at that and I'm like, what was I thinking?
Yeah, exactly. I think it was just a time where people were seeing the doomsday coming, and we were all, you know, I knew my job was sort of on the line and we were all just sort of sitting ducks. And so we were looking towards, you know, other creative outlets. And without knowing it, I think a lot of creative business owners at that time were probably starting to realize, hey, you know, well, if we can't have a steady paycheck, we're going to have to make it for ourselves. And right. So that's where Farewell Papery was born.
I love that story because I think a lot of people can resonate with that story. I think that we've all been in a position where, you know, the day job or whatever we were doing for our jobby job wasn't quite fitting our needs, or, you know, we felt insecure or unstable maybe, you know, and they made the jump. And so how did you guys started with invitations? How did you make the jump to like off the shelf goods and start your wholesale line?
We were doing invitations for a while, and then we realized it was almost the same pattern of what we were dealing with in advertising with clients, and these ideas that we had that we thought were like super cool and really great were like getting Frankensteined into like other invitation looks that we weren't really loving. And one day we're just like, wait a minute, we're kind of chasing our tails and doing the same thing that we did before, and it would be really cool if we could do our own thoughts and our own feelings and expressions on cards and see if they sell.
Right.
Yeah. If we were like, why can't we just put something out there? And if people don't like it, they don't have to take it, but it's just exactly what we want of it. And then, you know, naturally that was like, okay, well, let's do our own card line. And while we did, you know, there was actually some really nice romantic parts about doing custom stationery, and it's really, you know, you're working with, you know, a lot of artistic license, and you can be super creative, and you can, you know, and you know, this is a really special moment. It was a lot more personal than working in advertising. There were still definitely some aspects to it that we were unsatisfied with creatively. And so once we did our line, it was kind of no looking back, and it gave us the chance to put our own stuff out there. And it was like, you know, take it or leave it sort of attitude. So.
No, I love it. And you guys definitely have a honed in aesthetic and style to your products. I mean, they're very fun. They're snarky a little bit. You know, they're like a little edgy and fun. And it just, it definitely exudes both of your personalities well. I love it. So you came to Paper Camp in 2012, but before you came to camp, you had already done a show. You'd done the San Francisco Gift Show, and then you're looking at NSS as an option for you. Was San Francisco Gift like your launch into wholesale, or had you already been reaching out to stores prior to that show?
It was pretty much our launch.
That was, I would say that was our debut. I mean, we were probably going about it the completely wrong way for a long time before we actually did it.
Me too. So,
you know, we just didn't understand the wholesale market. And so we were trying it how one does when you're getting into an industry that you don't totally understand yet. And we were just sort of feeling it out. I mean, I was living in San Francisco at the time, and I actually took a portfolio of our card line, you know, actually taped into a photo album, you know, up and down Valencia Street in the Mission, going to print stores, you know,
I love it.
One store after another, literally not even thinking about, is this the right store for us? Is this something, you know, do they even sell cards? I was just going in, literally, you know, door-to-door saleswoman trying to get people to just look at our line, get some feedback. And then, you know, I don't even think at that point we knew how to write orders or anything. And then, you know, I remember coming back and talking to Lisa being like, I don't think this is the way this happened.
I love the hustle though, but you're right. It's not the way it happens.
And that was when we started to sort of figure out, okay, well, how do these stores pick up these lines? How do we get in front of them? Who are the people who are putting them in the stores? I think that, you know, through that experience, there were people who were like, well, I'm not the owner and I don't make those decisions. So that's when we started to realize like, okay, we need to find a more formal backdoor approach to this.
I love that story though, because I mean, I feel like we all have a similar story to like, I didn't know what I was doing. So I just tried, like, I just tried one way to see what would happen. And then I clicked and went on again. So I love that.
We actually were, our first shop that we ever got in was consignment.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And it was like a friend of ours who owned the shop. And I think she just felt bad for us. And so it was like, oh, we'll put it on consignment and see how it does. And
yeah, that we had, was like an really event. Exciting. Yeah. We had an event and, you know, people came out and all of our friends and, you know, we had some sales from people who knew us and were obligated to buy from us. sort of where it started, where it said, okay, well, we can create a line and we can create things that people want, but then figuring out how to get out there was part of that process. And then I think we learned about NSS, you know, just from looking online at the different stationery lines and the blogs, and you kind of, you know, that's the first thing you see about. And so we knew that was sort of the big Super Bowl of stationery. So we ended up walking the show 1 year and, you know, totally blown away, totally intimidated, felt completely unprepared to do that. And so that's where I think we decided to do San Francisco.
Cool.
Because that was going to be, it was local to us and our studio at the time. We could bring in our own furniture. We literally like took furniture from my front hallway in a car and like dragged it into the convention center and, you know, set up our booth that way. And it was just a really great experience. And that was when we knew, okay, we can do this. We can get our stuff out there. We picked up a few, I think it was like a handful of wholesale accounts that way. And we just felt better about learning how to manage those accounts on a small scale, learning how to set up the booth on a smaller scale. We felt so much more comfortable. It was less of an investment. And then once we were able to tackle that, I think we knew we were ready for NSS.
That's awesome. I've been talking to a lot of people lately who are, you know, waiting on NSS, and they're taking a more like strategic and thoughtful approach to, okay, let me get my mailing list in and let me do like a release outside of a show and get feedback and start to learn how to take those orders and fulfill those orders and communicate with these stores and answer their questions in a way that makes me sound like I know what I'm doing. And and I think that's a really great strategy. I mean, I, as you know, just launched at the show at NSS because I didn't know what I was jumping into either. And so there's a lot of benefits, I think, to waiting until you've got your product dialed in and your sales tools honed in and get some feedback from those retailers. So I like what you said there.
But I think, though, to your point, it's like, it's kind of a fine line. I think you want to definitely know what you're doing. I think Lisa and my greatest fear would be to look like we're not, you know, competent. Yeah. I think that was for us. We want to be able to at least fake it till we make it. Even if we don't know what we're doing, we need to at least know how to act like we know what we're doing. And so I think the biggest thing would be for us to spend all this money and go out there and totally bomb. And even though now looking back, it's like, if we had done that, you know, if we had gone that way too, the same way you did and just gone and done NSS and totally didn't get any orders or for whatever reason, that in itself would have been a whole learning experience that we could have. And I think that there is a certain point where you have to just jump in and start playing the game, you know, and put yourself out there. Because I do think that a lot of people that we meet now, you know, a lot of people who are starting their lines and trying to figure out when is the best time for them to put it out there, you can see that there's so much hesitation, there's so much fear of failure or whatever that means to that person, that people hold themselves back from getting out there. So I do think that there is a certain point where you just have to jump in, whether or not you know.
Maybe feet first, not head first.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we know our limitations and we know that the chunks that we need to make and take on, and that's just how Lisa and I work. But, you know, there are certainly some people who will just jump right in and do great, you know, because you can't hold yourself back.
No, I'm so glad you brought that up, because there are a lot of people that have that paralysis of, I have to have every T crossed and every I dotted. And, you know, like we talk about at camp, like stuff happens and things that you can't even anticipate are going to happen, good and bad. I'm not trying to be like doomsday over here, but, you know, you kind of got to roll with the punches and you got to just, like you said, Lisa, jump in feet first, maybe instead of head first. I like that.
Yeah.
So let's talk about what inspires you when you're developing new product. And I'd love for you to kind of lay out what your process is for research and development and how you decide what to move forward with versus what not to move forward with. Do you guys have like a set strategy for that?
Yes and no.
Yeah. I mean, I think we've just started to refine it. I think we're playing on a different level now that we have no choice but to look into it a little bit better. We've certainly launched with things that we maybe shouldn't have or should have done some research before we actually put it out there and spent the money and investing in.
I think before we were very much like, oh, this would be something that we haven't seen on the market before. This will be a cool product to carry, or why wouldn't people want this from us? And like Jen said, we didn't do the research and launched and kind of failed a little bit with certain products that we thought would be gangbusters and just weren't, because either the numbers weren't right or we didn't do enough like market research or see who the competition was.
Or sometimes we didn't have the capacity to create a market for them. Yeah. I think that was what we were looking for early on, was like, oh, this would be cool. We're making something new. This is a completely new type of product. And then we put it out there and spent all this money to get a ton of it made. And like, in particular, I'm thinking of, we did this like party wears line, which was like DIY, sort of easy DIY party supplies stuff. So it was like little cupcake toppers and cone toppers and, you know, gift wrap and all these different things that were awesome in theory and looked great together. And we loved the design of them and all the things that you want creatively for your product. We were very proud of and put out there, but then we didn't have, I don't think, the foresight to know how to put it out there and market it in the way that people would have an interest in it and create that buzz around it. There was a lot of confusion as to, what are these things? How does this even work with your existing card line? And, mm-hmm. you know, where's the space? What's the type of store who could even sell this and merchandise this? And you have, you know, 80 different types of products with all these different patterns and designs. Where is somebody going to put this in a stationery store? You know, and for all of these considerations that we would totally make now that we didn't know to make then. It was just, hey, we like this. It looks cool. Let's try it. Right. You know, we have, this is what we're going to put our money into. And we literally dumped all of our money for this 1 year's release into it and sat on that product. Now, I mean, we still have it now. We can send some cupcake toppers.
Send them down for camp. We'll use them at camp.
I think now we're definitely more cautious. Not to say that we're not like, oh, this would be so cool to do, or this would be a really great idea. We definitely just do way more research when it comes to, you know, is this like still really popular in the market? Is this the right price point that we can sell this? Do we have the margins that we need? How much inventory can we handle?
Are we willing to lose profitability on that first run just to see how they do, so we don't have a ton of that inventory sitting there, and then redo it once we know it's doing well? All those different things that we just didn't know. We didn't have the experience to know to think about before then. And then also, I mean, this is a big thing for us, is kind of always wanting to be on trend and look around at what's going on in the industry, but not come in too late to something that other people are doing way better than we could ever do, at a way better price than we could ever do it. And then also staying true to our brand. And how do we, I think that's the most important thing that we look at now, is what are we putting out there and how do we spin it that it works within our brand voice completely and can sort of provide a niche space for that. And one thing that we did from that one party supply, you know, fiasco from that year, the one great thing that came out of that was that, you know, at the last minute we thought, you know, what else can we put out there that's like party stuff that people can relate to, that it's an automatic hook about full collection. And we started doing gold foil cocktail napkins, and that was like a total last minute decision. Let's just do a small run, let's do a small assortment, just so we can add some color to these pieces and add some variety to the collection.
Yeah.
And thank God we put those out there, because now those are among our top selling products with our cards. I mean, pretty much every order we have has cards and cocktail napkins on it. So from that did come a little happy accident where we weren't thinking about how well is this going to do? What are our margins? And then we just put it out there and it worked out. It ended up working out great. That's probably the one good thing out of the whole collection.
Well, the other happy accident was like, we need a pricing matrix so we know what our overhead is, how much we're paying our employees to package these items and put them together. And we just didn't have any of that before.
I think that's really great for you to touch on, because when we talk at camp about setting your pricing, you know, we tell people to include things like their overhead and growth if they want to work with sales reps down the line or whatever it is. And that's kind of a hard concept for younger businesses to get their head around. I had a hard time with it.
We just want to think about how much it costs to make it, what the hard costs are, because it looks so much better. But at the end of the day, if it's, you know, now we have – each one of our products probably passes through three or four sets of hands, and we have to pay every single one of those sets of hands to do that. Okay. So we have to factor that into the cost, and looking at it that way has changed the way we develop our products completely.
Totally.
sometimes there's stuff that we love to do and we totally want to do, but we just can't do it because we can't make the margins on it.
That leads me to another question about, are you selling everything in your line, both wholesale and retail, or do you hold some things back only to retail if the margins won't work for wholesale?
We sell everything wholesale and retail.
Yeah.
So when you're doing your matrix and doing your research, you always try to make sure that it can hit your margins for wholesale.
Yeah, yes. We start at wholesale.
Nice. Okay.
And because our retail market is so small compared to our wholesale revenue, and that's where we're going to be able to make it up. So we have to offer it wholesale because that's where it's going to catch up. That's where the margins will catch up for us. So.
Right. Okay. Great. So you guys have done a really great job of expanding outside of just paper stuff. You're doing, you know, glassware, and you've got the napkins that you mentioned. You've got these new sparkle cards. Talk about some of the gifty items that you've brought on in the last year or two.
Well, I think the biggest one is the glassware that we just launched in December. And it's something that we had been wanting to do for a while. And I think we are just more scared that we were like, how do we deal with a 3D product that breaks?
Yeah. Because paper, yeah. What do we do with it? How do you foil on it?
Produce it ourselves. How do we store this? So a lot of it was logistical, and I think it was getting over that hump of, can we make this product at the right price? But then, you know, storage is like a big issue that we had to figure out, and shipping was a totally different monster that we had to think about.
Yeah, so, I was going to say that shipping is a hurdle that a lot of people wanting to get into mugs are grappling with, and even, you know, setting their minimum quantities around how they can package and ship them, you know, doing things in a way that
is always account for your packaging costs too. Yeah. Because I mean, that's one thing that we had to factor into it. And we looked at it for a long time. This is something we had been talking about for probably 3 or 4 releases, and then finally found a way to do it. And it's funny because we started out where we wanted to do glassware, and then we thought, oh, well, price-wise, the cost for us to produce paper cups or plastic cups is probably going to be lower. Mm-hmm. And so we ended up going down that route. But then once we looked at it, you know, it was like the cost for us to do paper cups that we would have to then repackage in sets and sell in sets. And that would cut down the price that we were getting per, you know, the return that we were getting per item that we were paying for on that. It just, we couldn't make it work. And so we sat on it for a while. And then we went back and, you know, looked at glassware again. And we realized, oh, it just makes sense for us to sell individual glasses, pay for one, sell one, and that's it. And so it was actually awesome because we ended up where we wanted to be, but we had to go through this whole circle of, you know, down this rabbit hole of production to figure that out and make sure that that worked for us. And now it's great, you know, and the, you know, we're still figuring out the logistics. The inventory sits literally in the middle of our studio and we all just walk around. But, you know, stuff like that, we just are figuring it out as we go along. And luckily they've been pretty well received, and we are hitting a market. I think people really love that stuff, and we were able to do it in a way that we thought felt like us. Mm-hmm. You know, it still has our snarky sayings on it. It has our design aesthetic that stands out a little bit from what's being done out there, and or we hoped. And so
it is.
Yeah. It kind of goes with our line too. Like our cocktail napkins were the launch of like what our party line would be. And then we added coasters to it and matches, and it just seemed like a natural progression to start adding barware to it.
No, I agree. I think it's great too how you've branched out, and it feels like a really organic way, to your point, Lisa, but complimentary as well.
So. Yeah, and we hope so. I mean, I think that that's the whole point is, I think for a long time we thought, oh, well, we're a greeting card company or we're a letterpress company. And then we realized how limiting that was from a branding standpoint, because really it's our brand voice and our fun sayings and things like that that people were wanting. And that's where we were developing our true brand. And so once we sort of embraced that, that opened our minds to all kinds of different products and just allows us to explore all different items that we can offer.
Yeah. Besides. Plus it gives you different price points, different margins, different, you know, options for different retail stores that will be attracted to what you're selling too.
Yeah, absolutely.
It widens the things out. So one of you mentioned that when you're thinking about your R&D and your product that you're going to release, you have to think about your team and how sometimes you have, you know, two or three people touching something to get it out the door. Let's talk about your team. How did you know it was time to hire? And what was that first position you hired for?
We were working 24 hours a day. Yeah.
I think it was, I mean, well, that's the thing is it, we probably should have hired a long time before we did, but we resisted because we thought about, well, how can we afford to bring someone on, you know, like it's, there's already two of us, the revenue is already split in a different way because of our partnership. And so our salaries are already what they are based on, you know, with how the company is doing. And so we thought, well, how do we bring in another person? And as somebody, you know, one of our friends in the industry had said, like, as soon as you hire somebody, you'll just see the return and you won't regret it one bit. And we were like, yeah, I mean, that's great in theory, but we don't, like, you know, how do we actually physically make these paychecks happen for this person? And then I think it was actually, I don't know. We were having help from friends and family, and that was awesome. And we were realizing, like, okay, when you delegate some of these other parts of your business, you just open yourself up to doing a lot more stuff that can, that can provide a way bigger, better return for the business overall. And I don't know if it was it when I got pregnant or when I was thinking about getting pregnant. I think it was like I was thinking about having a kid and, you know, driving home at 8:30 at night thinking, you know, how would this wouldn't even work. Like, how would I have a kid and, you know, not be able to be home in a decent time to do what I was imagining kid stuff would require? And so okay, we need to bring somebody on. And I think when I did get pregnant the first time, it was totally like, okay, well, let's bring somebody on to help Lisa out. And while I was on maternity leave, and we did and never looked back, and it was awesome. And we'd grown, you know, and then it was, you know, the same thing where I was doing the majority of our printing and production and then was pregnant and just physically couldn't do it.
Right.
And Lisa was doing all the printing and production, but then that was, you know, making it harder for the business, the operational stuff to get done and fluidly. And so then once we brought somebody to help out with that, that helped free up Lisa.
So how many people do you have on your team now?
Right now we're lean and mean. We have three people on
it
staff.
Fluctuates.
Yeah. We're always between like 3 to 6 people.
Okay.
Just depending on where we are, you know, where our staff is, you know, we, have had great different groups of people throughout the years since then. We always usually have one sort of wholesale operations manager and then one production manager who does our printing. And then we'll have a fulfillment staff based on, you know, what the flow is. I think we've become really, really efficient in the past year.
Yeah.
Which is awesome. So now we're doing pretty great with the team that we have. Everybody has their roles and things get done so much more efficiently than they did in the past. And so now we're just rolling through. And then as we get busy, like during show seasons, when there are larger orders, we have, you know, help that we'll bring in, temp help that we'll bring in to help us get through those.
And then we also hire out contractors. We have a bookkeeper and then someone who does like our newsletters. We're kind of like beef that up to like our social media and stuff like that. So
cool.
You know, contractors are a good way to start out if you want to go like down that route before like actually having an employee.
Yeah, we have like all of our professional services. So accounting, legal stuff, bookkeeping. Right now we're in a great place where our bookkeeper is our wholesale manager.
Oh, nice.
Doubly talented, which I think is one thing that as we've grown our team, we figured out it really helps to have people who can wear a lot of different hats. And so that's definitely something we look for when we're bringing on new people. Not necessarily are they qualified to do all of these things right now, but can we look at it as though, okay, well, can we expand their roles or can we grow them into a different role within the...
I love that. I have a similar strategy. I try to bring people on more of a independent contractor or project basis to see what their work style is like and how they do and how we work together and, you know, if they really understand my business and the role that they're doing. And it it always makes me happy when I can expand upon that and add them to different roles.
And as we've worked with more people too, I think the first sort of the first year that we had employees, we thought, oh my gosh, what are we going to do if these people ever leave us? Nobody can ever do these things. And that's one thing that we've learned is that the way we set up our business and our operations is going to be completely dependent on how well those roles transition over. Because as you know, things happen, life happens. We've had people that have left for personal reasons, and you know, it put us in a really great position to figure out how to make those roles a lot more seamless from person to person. So instead of looking at the staff as, okay, they're, you know, while their personality traits and all of their skill sets are very key components to how successful the business is, the way we've set up our operations plays a huge part in how successful they are in the roles that they're placed in. So
absolutely. So can we talk about that a little more? Like, do you guys have an employee manual that outlines your like systems and processes for different things, or how do you make it more like larger scale?
Yeah, we actually do. We have an operations Bible is what we call it. And it has everything in there that you could ever possibly think of, from like wholesale orders to retail orders to our reps, how to package something, how to deal with our key accounts, our online orders. And it's something that we refer to almost every day.
I love that.
And it's something, it's a great tool to teach our, like, our employees to use. And then if one of our employees decides that they want to leave, then they actually can have that and that knowledge to hand over to the next person. So we try to like have the transition be pretty smooth so that the employee that's in that role will like kind of give that information to the next person or help them like walk them through it.
That's really great. Do you, I assume too, you have your team like updating it as you are evolving too?
Yeah, that's something that we're pretty good about too. And it took us a long time to get to this point. I mean, it was like, I think that was a huge frustration for some people on our team before, was that there were all these things that were in my head and Lisa's head about how to do stuff, and they would have to come to us.
And then we'd be like, oh, they're asking us all these questions all the time.
Yeah. You know, and it's hard for us to get into a groove with what we're focusing on or our projects, because we were spending a lot of the time just being, you know, managers, just giving answers and giving instruction throughout the day. And while that's still the case, there's certainly a lot of things that our team just needs our instruction on. It's happened so much less because they do have these resources. We've just set up all kinds of stuff online on the server, you know, and then in the operations Bible where they can have something to look at to try to solve the problem themselves before they come to us or before they need to ask, you know, how do I do this? And then, like Lisa said, the training from person to person. So whenever we do have a transition in a certain role, that person can train the next person, and it's worked out so well for us. I mean, there are people in our studio now that know how to do stuff that Lisa and I don't know how to do.
That's the end goal, right?
Scary. A little scary. But yeah, I think that was the biggest thing from a control aspect. It was hard to let go of that.
Control
over the business. But as we've delegated more and more, it's just helped us so much more, because the things that Lisa and I are dealing with on a day-to-day basis now just absolutely don't allow for those little operational operational oversight. So yeah, it's been great. That's helped us grow completely.
I love that. I love hearing about the different way people set things up to make it easy for their teams too. We've been working on an operational manual very similar to that, and I keep it in. Well, we use Asana for project management now, and then we're using a Google site right now for the operation manual, but trying to figure out what the best solution is, it sometimes takes a while. But just, I'd encourage people to just start writing down your systems, writing down your processes. Like, it will take a while, and it's not something that you can probably sit down in one swoop and do, but the sooner you start, the sooner it'll be done, even if it takes you a year or two to get it all done.
Yeah, definitely. And that was actually the gift that our last wholesale manager she left us to, you know, put this thing together. And that was, you know, such a great parting gift for her to leave for
us. Oh, yeah.
She was like on the last day, she like brought it over like this golden child, you know. And it was great. We needed that. And, you know, we did, we still, you know, like we, some, you know, we get the pull to where we were like, okay, we should be more high tech about this. Everything should be digital. But then there are limitations too, like within our team, you know, people don't all know how to do all that stuff. And so just having something in a binder that sits up at the front desk, you know, where all that stuff goes down, has been invaluable, I think. And we do have a ton of stuff, like Lisa and I have Google Docs and all these different places where things are, but they're at least written down somewhere.
Totally.
And somebody can find them. Yeah.
Well, and it's different too. A lot of your people are there working side by side with you. So most of my team is virtual. So having stuff in, in a virtual format makes more sense for us. But yeah, no, if I had everybody in my office, we would for sure have one of those binders sitting right there for them to look at. But awesome. Well, can you guys share a little bit about having a business partner and the benefits of that? Because you two work very well together. And it's fun to hear you talk about this stuff in tandem because you finish each other's sentences in a lot of ways. So I know this partnership has been ongoing.
We're married.
I know.
We're basically like, married.
I mean, we've been working together for almost a decade now. And so you'd have to be, you know, your partnership would have to evolve and, you know, figure out, we've gone through a lot to figure out how to work well together. And I think that we've come to a really good place.
I think we're very lucky in the way that we started our relationship was that it was a working business relationship. As a team in advertising, you're working side by side for many, many hours. Sometimes 7 days a week, and you can't help but become close with that person. But then at the same time, you have to be able to have kind of a tough shell to listen to the other person and say, if they say, oh, I don't like that, then you have to say, oh, okay, well, why not? What will work? Uh-huh. And I think we've had that since the very beginning of being able to say, oh, I don't like how that's working, or, you know, maybe we need to change course. And it's not like we take it personally. It's just more of, we know that when we work together, it's going to be better in general. And if it's all of a sudden we take it personally, or there's, you know, some kind of emotional, you know, difference,
meltdown.
we're able to kind of like separate that and say, well, what's the real issue? What's really happening here?
Totally.
And so that way I don't, you know, kudos to the people that work with their partners or their husbands or their wives or their friends. We always say we wouldn't be able to work with our husbands day by day on day. But yeah, I don't know. I mean, it just seemed to work out that way, that the business relationship started and then like our friendship kind of developed from there.
Yeah, completely. And now, I mean, our lives are so intertwined now that we're like family, you know, but right. It definitely, we started out in a professional relationship. And so I think that was key to it. And I mean, it was definitely hard to have a business partner at the beginning because we didn't know what we were doing, and we didn't know how to be business partners. And so we had to figure that out the same way you would any
relationship,
you know, and like figure out not only how to receive hearing somebody say, oh, I don't like that, but also how to say that to each other,
right,
and how to be constructive. And we work completely differently. We are completely different types of executors and conceptors and all that stuff. And it took a long time to learn from each other. But I think that, you know, over the years, we've gotten to the point where we've taken the best of how each other works and put that into our own, you know.
Right. Leveraging each other's strengths, it sounds like.
Yeah, totally. And there are things that we can lean on for each other independently, you know, where we know, okay, well, she's good at that. She, you know, like she takes the reins on that. And then, you know, well, this is my strength. I'll take the reins on this. Yeah. And then we always confer with each other for support. And we've just always been in that place where when one of us was down, the other one picked up and said, okay, here's how we're going to do it. And then we just, we'll swap, you know, like if the other one's having a hard day or a hard time, then we know, okay, well, it's time to sort of, we can carry each other basically through it.
We also work very independently. Like we'll divvy up tasks.
I was just going to ask that. Do you have like specific roles that you handle, Lisa versus Jen, or?
Kind of. So what I was going to say is we divvy up tasks. Like we'll have a meeting on Monday and say, this was what needs to happen this week. And so we'll say like, oh, okay, I'm going to take care of this. Jen will take care of that. And then usually throughout the day, we're just like asking each other questions or like, what do you think about this? Or we're always coming back and meeting in the middle just to discuss like what's happening, what's going on.
Are we on the same page? Yeah. Are we both, you know, everything that comes from the business, we want to make sure it comes from us as a united front and make sure that we're both okay with that. So that's how we'll confer with each other. Yeah. But yeah, we totally execute things separately just because at this point we need, you know, you have to at a certain point so that you can get more done and be more efficient.
Not to say that like other partnerships cannot work that way. They totally work differently. We went to a conference and we were on this panel about partnerships and there was a sister team or it was
they were cousins or something. Like that,
and they were like, oh, we totally work independently and we just do our checklist and check it off and just assume the other person does it. And we were like, what?
we won't talk to each other for days or weeks. They were remotely and they would be like, yeah, we'll just check in every week or two through email or a call. And we're just like, no, Lisa. I mean, we can't even have our desks like facing opposite each other because it would be too much turning around. So we can just turn and we can see each other's screen and be like, hey, look at this real quick, you know, and it's the way we work just because we need to touch base like that. And I think we are pretty reliant on the others, you know, the others' opinion to make sure that that's where we're coming from together.
But I think that's why your brand is so strong too, because it clearly articulates both of your voices. It's not, you know, for a year or so when somebody is leading the charge more so, I'm making this up by the way, but you know, if there's a certain time period that one of you is leading the charge, it doesn't sound more like Lisa's voice. And then later it sounds more like Jen's voice. Like you guys have a very specific brand voice and it's very cohesive. And I'm sure that stems from your communication style or your work style.
Yeah. I mean, I think we're totally different personality wise, but from the branding, we are always on the same page. Yeah. We always want the same thing. And I think we're always pretty clear and we'll push each other. We'll certainly say like, okay, well, what if we do this? I think we do this. I've been thinking about this. Let's, you know, like let's push ourselves to do something a little different. And just the fact that we trust each other from that standpoint, I think helps us evolve a lot. And that's probably the biggest thing that other people and, you know, that we've talked to who are either thinking about doing a partnership or just wanting to know how to make, you know, their current partnership work. I think that that's the key component is you have to want the same goals and you have to want the same things for your brand. And your agenda has to be the exact same. The way you come about it and the way you approach it doesn't have to be the same. But you definitely need to know, you know, every year we have a summit at the end of the year. Towards the end of the year for what are our goals for the next year? Where are we personally? Where do we feel like we are professionally? What are our goals that we need to look at and keep in mind? And I think having that focus for our brand has allowed us to make sure that even if we're doing things in a different style, we're still working towards the same end goal for the business. So that's great. Yeah. So that's definitely worked well for us. And then also there's just the, you know, there are just the natural things about having a partner that make doing this a lot easier for us. You know, like for instance, I'm 3 weeks away from having my second kid and, you know, I couldn't do it if Lisa wasn't able to keep the business going while I'm out, you know, and there are just things that we have always said. I mean, we're always supportive of each other's personal lives. I think that that was the big part of why we had our business was because we didn't want our jobs to rule our lives anymore or our careers to rule our lives. We needed, you know, and that's with our business, we're always family first. And so if something comes up, that's, you know, you got to take care of that. Take care of that. You have a doctor's appointment, go, you know, like if there's no, we don't want to ever feel grief for having to have an outside life, whether that is, you know, spending time with family or focusing on your health or, you know, all those things. Yeah. So,
and we do for our employees too. Like we say, if you need to have family time or you need to take off or go to the doctor's appointment or whatever, like we're never ever like holding anyone back from doing that. It's just
like no one should ever feel sick or feel bad because they have to call in sick.
Yeah.
Right. Or, you know, because they have something going on with their kid or, you know, or their they cat or whatever. Yeah. Yeah. I think that that was one big thing with our company that we didn't necessarily set out to have this in mind, mm-hmm. but as we've, you know, the longer we've been in business, the more we've realized like, okay, well, our personal lives have to evolve. Cause I think, you know, when you first start a company, you're totally fine with it being all about work right. all the time. Cause you're so passionate about it and you want to, you know, you don't mind working morning till night.
The adrenaline's going and you're excited by it. Yeah.
But I think that as we were doing this more and saying like, oh, okay, well, we're still doing this and our personal lives are also evolving in different ways. You know, we have to look at that and we have to talk about that. And so that's, yeah, I think we both feel fortunate that we support each other in that way. And
that's great.
Both know that if anything comes up, the other one has their back from the business standpoint.
Right, right. It's great that you've made that, built that basically into your company's core values too, of this is important to us. I think, as you mentioned, Jen, we all get into this for different reasons. We look to entrepreneurship, but I think it's really important to not only remember the specific goals you want to accomplish in terms of, you know, what products you want to develop, what stores you want to get into, you know, like those type of goals. But it's important to look back at your original goals of starting this business in the first place. Was it because you wanted more time for yourself or your family? Was it because you wanted the ability to control your work days and had more time? Is it because you wanted to make more money on your own time and at your own, you know, pace? So there's a lot of things like that that I encourage people to look back on an annual basis when they're doing that strategic planning. And it sounds like you guys are looking at all those things in addition to the actual operational type of goals that you're making.
And on a larger picture too, to that point, Katie, what you're saying too, is that Lisa and I also have the conversation of, okay, well, how does this, you know, how does this go away if one of us doesn't want to do it anymore? We have to be totally open and honest with each other on that point. And so we're also very supportive of the idea that one of us may change our minds about how we feel about the business and we have to feel okay with having those feelings and addressing those feelings. And so as we go further along into this, that's something that we do talk about is, you know, does one of us have a different exit strategy or, you know, vision of how we would not do this anymore, you know? And if at any point one of us says like, I just don't know if I want to do this for the next 30 years, you know, like, then we have to acknowledge that and be open towards that. And I think that that's something that is key with a business partnership, especially because it's one thing if you're doing it on your own and you can make these own decisions. But, you know, now with a partnership, you have to understand that there are decisions that we could each make within our business that would affect not just the other partner, but also the other partner's family and, you know, livelihood of that family and all those things. So,
and the employees and everybody that's within the company. Yeah, for sure.
As we've grown, I think those are all things that we're just more aware of and we're more open to having discussions about and addressing as needed. And, you know, we understand that it's not the same as when we were both just starting it, seeing if it would work. Now there's a lot of different implications.
Yeah. I think it's good for you guys to like, I love that you're talking about that and open to talking about it here with me too, because I agree. I think that sometimes people join as business partners at the beginning and they think about how are we getting into this project together? What are we going to accomplish with this project? But they don't necessarily think about the outcome and the exit strategies and how to have those hard conversations if that does become something that's top of mind. But
and making sure you're set up too, I think, from a legal standpoint. Yeah. So all that stuff works and financially all that stuff works.
Yeah.
I mean, it's, you know, we have the, like our life insurance, we're on each other's life insurance policy. That's what a business partnership means.
These are all the exciting things about owning a business. No, I know. They're the necessary.
Yeah, exactly. They're necessary. And I think setting that up in the beginning, having those conversations in the beginning certainly makes it easier to continue on and have everyone be on the same page as you go through and as your business may evolve throughout the years. You know?
I'm going to like take this a sidestep away from partnerships in general and just advise anyone that's listening that, you know, as fun as all of the branding and the logos and the colors and the product development and all that stuff is and how it really fires you up, the stuff that we're talking about of getting your business formation and your financials and your legal stuff all situated, those are really important things to think about at the beginning. And I know it's not as fun to think about them, but it is important. We are running businesses here. They're not hobbies. So regardless of whether or not you have a business partner or not, those are things that you really want to be thinking about at the very beginning of your business. So yeah. Let's talk about what's next for Farewell Papery. What do you guys have on tap for this year? You know, can you share any things you're coming out with that are new? And silence.
A new baby.
Yeah, we're going to get through me having another kid.
Which will be wonderful. We're so excited for you.
Which will be awesome. I think we feel a lot more confident and a lot more prepared as far as getting through it. It doesn't seem, you know, we had a meeting last week about like, okay, well, how are we going to get through the month that I'm off for maternity leave? And it was kind of like, well, everything seems pretty covered.
Good.
It sort of just ended as like, okay, well, here's this, 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 and this. And then I guess just text me or, you know, or tell somebody else do it here, you know? And so that feels really nice. I think having that poured and knowing that exists makes it really easy to do that and tackle this in a way that is a lot less scary than when I had my first kid and we were a lot newer in the business.
Yeah.
So there's that. And then I think we have a lot of new product coming out. And then one thing actually that we haven't talked a ton about, but just sort of as a business, as business owners, Lisa and I are always looking at different ways for us to make revenue through the business.
Diversify.
Yeah, we're just sort of diversifying our revenue streams and figuring out other ways that we can make money for the business and keep our operation going and keep the staff, you know, that we have and make sure that we're just giving our business a little bit more security by looking at their opportunities. So whether that's licensing or product development, distribution outlets, just looking at things in a way broader sense now and trying to figure out, you know, how does our revenue come from other places than just waiting for the POs to come
in.
Because we've set up, you know, we have a great, our sales have always been great and they've always grown, but there's always this sort of fear of like, one day they might not come in anymore. And then what will we do? And I think as we've grown, we've started to see a lot of those peaks and valleys happen, you know, and naturally throughout the different buying cycles. And so trying to figure out how to get through that was our big task this year. And
I think it will continue on into 2017.
Yeah. Just looking at our, you know, how we can make ourselves available as representatives of Farewell Papery and and so just doing different things that have allowed us to have steady income from different sources so that we can just sort of know what we're dealing with revenue wise.
It also helps in the, you talked about some peaks and valleys, and I know you guys are probably a little more, you know, you can kind of anticipate what's coming in on the wholesale side a bit, but there are, I mean, in most wholesale businesses, there are peaks and valleys around, you know, new release time is going to have higher volume of orders rather than in the in-between seasons. Or, you know, there's sometimes that November, December time is slow because people are busy in their shops selling rather than actually buying. So having those alternative revenue streams and having licensing and the other projects, that really will help with your budgeting. And I mean, I'm not talking specifically to you guys, but just anyone in general, I'm a big fan of having different ways that you have revenue coming into your business and helping to fuel the overall operation. So that's amazing. We'll have to have you guys back on again to talk about some of those things you're doing.
We'll deep dive.
I totally do. We'll have you back for that. Good. Well, thank you both so very much for spending the time with me today. It's always so much fun to talk to you, but also to hear your story. And I know that everyone will get a lot of benefit out of hearing about how you've grown and scaled and things have changed along the way. I always like to tell people, look, running a business is not a straight line. It's not straight narrow. There's zigs and zags and you got to make changes as you go. And so hearing your story and how you guys have done that, and, you know, I think it's really valuable to everyone. So thank you. Thank you for doing that.
Absolutely. Yeah, thanks for having us.
All right. All right, guys. We'll talk to you soon. Proof to Product is brought to you by Trade Show Bootcamp and hosted by me, Katie Hunt. Since 2011, TSBC has worked with hundreds of product-based businesses to help them uplevel, scale, and build profitable, sustainable companies. You can find our show notes and additional resources at prooftoproduct.com. And if you like what you heard today, please head over to Apple Podcasts to leave a 5-star review and subscribe. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back next week with a new episode.